welcome to episode number 12 of The Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. This episode, we're talking about the adrenal glands, housing, and LaForte fractures.
I can't wait till we talk about LaForte fractures, because I'm pretty sure it's French for the Fort fractures.
I think you're right. I think it is. Already, we're not a minute in and the puns?
Oh my gosh.
Punished jokes? Mm-hmm. I am fairly certain that you should start being a stand-up comedian here.
Oh my gosh. People think I am so funny here, and I tell all of the old dad jokes, and people are like, Jen, you're so quick and witty. Like, the other day, somebody handed me something at work, and they said, all right, give me a tip. And I said, stay in school, kid. And he lost it. He was like, a tip like that? I never thought of that. It's really good for my ego.
I bet it. The problem is, I don't think they import enough, like, Chevy Chase movies.
Oh, my gosh.
That would fix a lot of it.
Yeah.
They would have at least heard it before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so we're talking about adrenal glands, and do you know what your adrenal glands are?
They're the glands that make adrenaline.
That's true.
Yes.
That's true. Do you know where they are?
Isn't it, like, in your pituitary?
No, I'll give you a hint. They're also called suprarenal glands.
I would say somewhere near your bladder.
Closer. Renal means kidney.
Kidneys.
And supra means on top.
On top of your kidneys.
Or above, yeah. So they literally sit on top of your kidneys. And they actually kind of look like they're like pyramids.
Oh.
Like little triangular pyramids. And they look very much like fatty tissue. Uh-huh. Like it looks like two little pyramids of fat sitting on top of your kidneys. But they're not actually fat, obviously. They just kind of look like it. But they are surrounded by perineal fat. So maybe that's, I don't know. That has nothing to do with it.
Okay,
so they're called suprarenal. They have sort of a yellow outer layer, so they, like, really look like fat, called cortex. That's the outer layer. And then on the inside, which is only, like, 10 or 20%, it's not very big inside, but that's the medulla, and it's kind of a reddish inner layer. So if you bisect them, like, if you cut them in half, mm-hmm. you have that yellow on the outside and the red on the inside, and they're kind of triangular-shaped. Totally makes me think of the lips from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. All right, so the two layers. So the cortex and the medulla aren't just different colors. They're actually like two different functional layers, right? And they actually come from different embryological origins.
Okay.
So the cortex outside comes from a mesodermal mesenchyme, so which it basically
just real quick, is this going to be an embryological segment, or is it going to be a histology segment?
More histology.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
But, yeah.
But I heard why embryo is important.
It's true. No, but what's interesting, though, is that the cortex comes from mesodermal mesenchyme. So it comes, like, from the same tissue of your other organs, right? But the medulla, the inside part, is derived from neural crest cells. Neural crest cells also make up your nervous system.
Oh, okay.
So on the outside, it's like your other organs. On the inside, it's actually more like your nervous system. Which is kind of neat because, so while other organs, they need nerves to go to them and then fire to like synapse in a special mm-hmm. way to innervate them, the nervous system can just straight line to the medulla and fire it off whenever it wants like that. Like they don't need anybody to interpret because that tissue is the same as like nervous tissue.
Well, and I think that's probably really handy because when you need adrenaline, you need it now.
True. Yeah, that's actually a good point.
I didn't even read your notes. Was that in your notes?
No, it's not.
It was a unique thought that I had.
That is
maybe
unique.
Not unique, but
actually, and you know, it's okay. So, adrenal cortex. Since you're talking about what they secrete, let's talk about what they secrete. The cortex secretes steroids. So everybody thinks steroids, they think, like, you go to the gym and you get...
beefy.
Yeah. But steroids are really just... They're cholesterol-derived hormones.
Okay.
Okay, so they have a lot of lipids in there, like little fats.
Okay.
Okay, and that's kind of really an important thing. And it makes them cool because when hormones go to the cells, right,
mm-hmm.
and they want to have something happen inside the cell, most hormones have to attach to the membrane, the cell membrane, or plasma membrane, to, like, receptors, and then that signals something to happen inside the cell. So that,
sure. It's like you put the lock in the key, yep. or the key in the lock.
It's more like, yeah, and but then something has to happen on the inside. So it's like, it's more like passing a note through a hole.
Okay.
Because then it causes a secondary messenger, it causes another, like, protein or whatever to be released inside the cell to go cause the change to happen.
Okay.
Okay, so now since we have lipids in the plasma membrane as well as lipids in our hormone and in our steroid, because they're the same, these hormones can actually pass through the plasma membrane and go all the way to the nucleus and enact change themselves.
They are... like busting down malls, but not even like, but not, they're, like, no, they're, no, like no, they're just, I guess they're sneaky. Are they sneaky?
I don't.
They like they've got their own rules.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, it's just cool that like they don't need anything in between them to interact. You know? So the cortex has three layers. We have the zona glomerulosa, the zona vasculata, and the zona reticularis. And those are going superficial to deep, right?
Okay.
And they all release different things. So zona glomerulosa releases mineral corticoids. So things like salty things, like aldosterone, which helps take care of your blood pressure.
Okay.
Zona I can't say some of these words. Zona fasciculata releases glucocorticoids, so things like...
sugars.
Yeah, sugars. Like cortisol is one.
Okay.
And cortisol is really important for, like, blood sugar regulation. And then...
yeah, people, like, on TV commercials talk about that as being, like, a stress hormone that makes you fat.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. And then there's zona reticularis, which releases sex hormones, so, like, weak androgens. An androgen is just, like... DHEA or androstenedione, right? They're precursors to like both DHEA and androstenedione can be converted to testosterone or estrogen.
Or estrogen. Oh, okay. Yeah. So,
because you know I use estrogen, right?
Yeah, and I use testosterone.
Yeah. So actually the adrenal gland is a major source of androgens for both guys and women.
Oh, okay.
Actually more for, no, I take that back. Mostly for women, not as much for guys. So I'm going to share a mnemonic that we use to keep track of all of these. So go fetch Rex. So zona glomerulosa, zona fasciculata, and zona reticularis. Go fetch Rex. For salty sweet sex.
Oh.
There are a tremendous amount of mnemonics to help us make it through school. And the majority of the ones that work are pretty dirty.
Yeah, that's fair.
But that, I mean, they stick in your head that way. So go find Rex. I've also heard of make good sex because it's mineral corticoids, glucocorticoids, and sex hormones. I like go fetch Rex for salty sweet sex. Because it helps you remember what they are, too.
Oh, sure.
So this is actually a two-parter. That's the first part of we talked about the adrenal cortex and, well, we talked about the adrenal glands and what they are. And we talked about the cortex a little bit more in detail. We're going to talk about the medulla next time. And we're also going to talk about some things that can go wrong when the adrenal glands go bad.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
Yeah. Make sure you check us out on artofmedschool.com. We have a ton of more information, blog posts, any of our past episodes that you might have missed,
as well as some really fun underwater photography that Mike has been working on. There's some cute photos of fish. So check us out on artofmedschool.com.
All right, Micah. So now we're going to talk about where people live that you go to school with. I think that's, you know, when you're back in the U.S. and you're thinking about, okay, what are all the things I have to do? Finding housing is kind of high on that list.
Yeah, as it should be.
And there's not, you know, Craigslist as such on the island. And so it's a little stressful. And I think that when I go through, you know, the process of going someplace new, I like to kind of envision where I'm going to be.
Yeah.
You know, as you're making it more solid in your mind. And so, you know, wanting to figure out where you're going to live, how much that's going to cost, and, you know, as you're budgeting out your life, right?
Right. Well, and there's no Craigslist exactly. There is a Craigslist, but it's for not just St. Vincent. It's like kind of a Carib Craigslist.
Oh, yeah. I actually haven't really looked at that much.
I looked. It was not utilized very much.
Yeah.
And then when we were getting ready to move down, I did do a bunch of searching. Basically, web presence is not good.
No, it's pretty terrible.
For pretty much anything.
Yeah.
However, Facebook.
That's what I was just about to say.
Oh, yeah. I said it first.
Well, you win.
And there's quite a few, like, buy and sell type groups.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't look at them for housing, so I don't know.
There's not much housing on them.
No, it's mostly cars and clothes. Well, yeah. I guess quite a bit of electronics.
Kind of consumer goods.
I get invited to, and there's a lot of them too. So I don't know which ones are good necessarily, if some are better for others, but I got invited to one the other day that is just like filled with sex toys.
Oh my gosh, really?
Like a lot of them. Like a lot. Like out of 20 or 30 posts that I looked at, probably 3-4 were not sex toys.
What?
Yeah, like it was probably 90% sex toys.
Wow.
It was totally odd.
Well, anyway, housing. So So there's not a lot of way to, you know, find housing much before you come. And
no.
We lucked out, you know, through kind of a series of fortunate events. We were able to find our place through a friend of a friend of a friend, essentially. Like,
yeah.
It's a long story, but it's really not that interesting. Unless you're, like, in it. But, so we were able to find our place fully furnished from a friend of a friend of a friend.
Yeah. And I like our place. Had we just been looking at a map, we probably wouldn't have chosen it.
No.
It's a little far from school and kind of everything else. I really, really like where we are, though.
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't change it at this point, for sure.
Yeah. So a lot of people moved here to a hotel and stayed in a hotel for, some were a couple days, some were, actually one was basically a month.
Yeah.
As they looked for places to live outside of class. To me, that is understandable. And that's actually what's usually recommended, is that you move, get a hotel, and then you can usually find a place within 2 or 3 days. But as a lot of people did it, like, they got here the day before classes started, and that, like,
man.
No way.
Yeah.
I want to start classes, and that be, like, the only thing that I worry about is med school.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was thinking about it earlier today. I'm putting in between 70, 80 hours a week between studying and going to school and stuff like that. So to add any stressor on top of that, you really have to pick and choose. And housing should not be a stressor.
Well, and as you're going to a brand new country where you don't know where anything is,
yep.
And you don't know what's fair.
Right.
And, you know, what pricing is fair. And, you know, you're not 100% sure where you're going to be getting your groceries and all of that stuff and what transportation's going to look like. You know, so, you know, adding that additional stress is, I'm glad something that we didn't have to do.
Right.
Is that we came early enough. We came straight into our furnished place and that had Wi-Fi and everything all set up and we didn't have to worry.
And how long were we here before classes started?
Oh, like about 4 days.
4 days?
Maybe 5.
Yeah, something like that. I can also see why people would not want to get locked into a place. before coming down since they don't know where anything is.
That's true.
And we essentially were, you know.
So if this place didn't end up being as great as it is,
yeah,
then it'd be... Yeah, so anyway, so... Yeah.
And a lot of people sign either 3 or 6 month leases. Some are even month to month right off the bat. But there are quite a few apartment complexes and housing situations that are specifically geared for med students. In fact, I've seen vacancy signs that said med students only.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So where do you... Are they... So how much does your school help you with that part of the... equation?
Basically, they give you a list of places for you to go check out. They say that's vetted. I don't know how recently it's been vetted, but because they were talking about needing to do it again. So obviously, you know, you can trust it so far. You know, these places that are on the list, I don't are ones that are geared for med students.
Which means they're all fully furnished.
They're all fully furnished. They're also a lot of, like, laundry included or house cleaning included, things like that. Some people also...
Like, someone will do your laundry for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some also have, like, not meal plans necessarily, but some kind of food option for you to tack on for an additional price. I know one guy lives next to a school, and he pays... $500 a month, and they do all of his suppers for him. $500 EC, you know. The thing is, though, these places also charge on the order of rent, like back home.
Sure,
I mean, you're paying $700-$800 US for an apartment,
and that's an expensive apartment, at least in the Midwest.
Yeah, so that's probably 2 bedrooms. So you can maybe get a roommate, but. I mean, you're easily dropping $400 to $500.
And how far are those places from school?
Quite a few of them are very near. Like, I know a lot of people have the option to walk to school. A lot of people have the option to walk to school, even if they don't think they have the option to walk to school.
Sure.
Because it's also very hilly around here. But there are a number of people that live far enough. And mostly, I've noticed this mostly with younger women, that it the lack of vehicles and, like, public transport here changes the way they have to do things. Because, there's two that I study with in particular that we were studying last night. It got to be, like, 5:30. Like, well, we got to go because we need to get home before dark. And they're walking. There's no not reliable enough vans to get them there. And, you know. So, I mean, that's something to consider.
Right. That if you aren't planning on getting a vehicle and you want to do public transportation, if you might then need to be closer to school.
Yeah.
But the school does provide free transportation the first year or the first semester.
The first semester. And that's
only within certain.
Yeah, because like where we live, I asked him. He was like, "Hey man, you don't reach Calder, do you?" And he laughed.
Yeah,
it's like, no, you're too far. I don't even think he comes as far as like Prospect.
Oh really?
I think Calaqua is as far as he goes. So that's not even.
Yeah.
If we hit Calaqua, I feel like I'm almost to school.
Yeah, even though it's closer to halfway.
Yeah, and the reliability. Of a private car service, I think just in general, here does not seem to be very good. Mm. There's a lot of people that end up walking because they don't know when they're going to arrive at, and if they're going to arrive at times, they'll, there was a test day that everyone got to school 20 minutes late.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So, but there are some people that went outside of that as well, just like us.
Yep.
You know, then you're kind of looking at getting unfurnished apartments and then having to furnish them. Because you can get unfurnished apartments real cheap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But then how do you furnish it?
Yeah.
Because that adds up pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, so my one friend, that one of my classmates that has an unfurnished apartment, was talking about needing furniture real bad. And so we started Googling blow-up furniture.
Yeah.
Because he's going back this first break here. Like, you know, for a couch, you can get a couch for like $50, a blow up couch, and honestly, they don't look that bad anymore. And even if they do, like, who the hell cares?
Exactly. All I can think of, though, is like it's kind of hot here and getting all sweaty.
No, there's fabric on them.
Oh, fabric on them? Wow.
Yeah, like,
I'll have to go
like,
look these up again.
Yeah, kind of like vellum or whatever.
Yeah, velour or whatever.
Yeah.
But with all the furnished apartments, you know, you're getting your pots, your pans, all of that stuff included. So that's, you know, that's really pretty nice, especially if you're just arriving in a suitcase.
Yeah, I mean, we even got sheets.
And the people that were living here previous are the owners, and they left, but left us, like, you know, a couple rolls of toilet paper and hand soap and
cleaner.
All of that stuff that you tend to just, like, throw down a ton of money for right at the beginning.
Yeah, that initial investment.
But the price ranges are going to be, you know, $600-$700 on the kind of upper scale, right?
Yeah, U.S.
Yeah. And then kind of going down to, like, $300 U.S. on the lower end, yeah?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
But by the time you're spending $300 U.S., you probably are needing to look at getting a car or...
Right.
You know, there'd be other challenges that'll come up.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Like what we've had.
Yeah. So, yeah. Don't be homeless.
I would say if you're going to move here, I would recommend living country.
Yeah. You'd say that, though.
Yeah. Well, like, the a lot of people at school, because they're in town, and they don't entirely always feel safe late at night or whatever, or it's the hustle and bustle of living in town, or for whatever reason, a lot of people don't have local friends.
Sure.
And we live in a small village where we know...
everybody.
Yeah. And if we don't know them, they still know us. Mm-hmm. You know? So, as far as, like, just living in the Caribbean, and actually living in the Caribbean, not, like, attending school and not doing anything else and not actually experiencing what it's like here, live country.
Yeah. And the other thing that I will say, live windward countryside on the east side of the island, because if you're going to live leeward, then you'd have to, if you're taking a van to come in, you'd have to switch vans, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, that's specific to my school.
Yeah, right. Yeah, specifically to St. Vincent, to your school.
Yeah, to St. Well, I suppose Trinity, too.
Yeah. Anyway. But, yeah.
Yeah, live country.
We launched our Patreon account. Please go check it out. You can find a link on our website or just look up Art of Med School on patreon.com. This is a great way to support us as we work hard to make the most and best content possible. You can find more information on our homepage at artofmedschool.com. And every little bit helps. Thanks. The fort fracture.
As we say in French, la fort fracture.
The fort fracture.
Yeah, so so we talked about fractures recently, and I thought we'd maybe add a few more on.
What is la fort?
Do you know where your la fort is?
No.
Well, that's good, because you don't have one. Like, it's the name of the doctor that came up with this classification system.
Dang it.
So,
sounded like something like that.
Something, yeah. Like, I always wonder who comes up with, like, I've discovered this horrible disease. I'm going to name it after myself.
I know. You've talked about this about four times on the podcast.
Yeah. We're gonna talk about why Lefort, about Lefort himself.
Oh.
Yeah. I looked him up. So, Lefort fractures are classifications of facial trauma.
Oh, okay.
So, car accidents, falls, violence, that sort of thing. And so this is definitely falling under the category of, I dare you to Google image search these.
Yeah.
So I looked up, like I said, I looked up Lefort. His name, so it's named after a French surgeon, René Lefort, who lived 1869 to 1951. Basically what he did to come up with his classification system for facial trauma was he took severed cadaver heads that were like that didn't have trauma or anything, and then gave them trauma. Like, he experimented with blows of varying degrees, of varying angles, and then dissected so you could see the bone trauma that was done to him.
Ew.
Yeah.
Did he at least put a bag over the face first before he, like, smashed him with his fist?
I have no idea. And, like, did he use a bat?
Did he, like, stand brick on top of his kitchen table and throw them down like heads of cabbage?
And, like, this has brought up so many questions in my head. Like, how many cadavers do you need for this kind of research? Where do you get that many cadavers? Like, 100?
Yeah, because that used to be a thing where people would, like, grave rob to,
yeah,
to dissect and figure out.
And we're talking early 1900s, you know. And also, how do you get funding for this?
I don't think you do. I think he probably had his day job as being, like, a doctor, and then his night job of, like, figuring out scientific mysteries of the world.
You romanticize everything. I feel like he probably...
If I didn't, I wouldn't still be able to be married to you.
Wow.
You are romantic.
Things just got real.
No,
do you know how much a cadaver costs now?
No.
$20,000.
How does that work?
You want a cadaver, you go to the cadaver store, they say, here's a cadaver, $20,000, please.
No. So, I donate my body to science, then what happens?
So it goes to probably like a hospital or something like that. But all the processing and the fluids and things of that nature, like somebody, and the labor that goes into preserving your body for use as a cadaver, I mean, all that costs money.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone's gotta do that. So while you don't charge for your body, you have to pay for all the preservation work that goes into
That's
it.
That's $20,000?
$20,000.
Can you get a discount? Like, you said one of your cadavers was missing a leg?
Yeah, so...
Do you get, like...
25% off?
Or something?
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, working on a cadaver is a really educational experience.
Yeah.
You know, it's like taking apart a car to learn how cars work. We are saving more than $20,000 by being in the Caribbean. So in my mind, we've got at least $20,000 extra in the school budget. No?
I'm following you.
Like, if I wanted to get one so that I could work on it at home.
But you can't just get one.
I don't know. We are in the Caribbean.
Yeah, but, like, you can't just get one.
I bet you someone in Calder knows a guy.
Yeah, no, I know the guy.
Yeah, we both know the guy. I bet you with $20,000 U.S., I can have a cadaver by the end of the day with whatever color nail polish I want. Totally, this is all totally off topic. So, Lafort fractures. Good thing this is a short script.
Mm-hmm. Keep going.
All right. So he takes all these severed cadaver heads and beats them up and then cuts them down to the bone to see what kind of fractures were done, right? And he determined that with all these different, like, amounts of force and stuff like that, we actually have a predictable patterns of fracture that happen.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of neat. And so there's three predominant types of mid-face fractures. So Lafort...
When you say mid-face, what do you mean?
I'm talking, like, on your face, the middle part.
Oh, my gosh, my God. So, okay, from, like, your eyebrows down to your lips?
Pretty much.
And then from, like, your...
From either end of the eye.
From either end of the eye, okay.
Yeah. More or less.
The beauty part.
So, Lafort 1 fracture... Lafort 1 is a horizontal fracture of the maxilla. You know where your maxilla is? It's the
bone?
No. So the maxilla is like the upper lip part.
Okay.
Okay. So
like your upper teeth.
Yeah. So superior to the roots of your teeth, like above where your roots of your teeth are. Think of it as like a fracture that kind of goes. Around that bone.
Your cheekbone? Oh, okay.
Yeah. So kind of like a mustache, like the top part of a mustache in a way.
Okay.
But with that kind of a fracture, that actually separates your teeth, like all your teeth stay together because they're, you know, in the bone. but that bone separates from the part that attaches to your nose, some from the nasal floor. So if someone comes in with a Lafort 1 fracture, their upper part of their mouth will actually be kind of down to the base of their mouth, like they won't be able to open their mouth because it's flopping in there.
Ew. How do you get that? Like, what's an example of how you get that?
Facial trauma.
Like getting punched in the face?
It would have to be a hell of a blow to the face. Because, like, your bones are not soft, you know?
No.
So, car accident where you hit the steering wheel with a hard enough...
Are you also assuming that your nose is all smushed in?
It could be, yeah. It's not necessarily true, but... I mean, if you caught the right kind of blow to the mouth, but not to the nose, like a baseball bat.
Yeah, okay, yeah, baseball bat to the broad side of your face.
Yeah.
Like that, okay.
Yeah.
All right, continue.
Okay, so Lafort 2 fracture. So that's kind of the same starting point.
So we went to Lafort 1, and now we're Lafort 2.
Yep. So same sort of thing, but instead of going over, like, the mustache area... it's more of like a pyramid. So it's like one, but it's instead of straight across, this break goes up across the nose. So same sort of thing, but up over your nose and then back down. So the entire center of the central part of the face, including the hard palate, which is like the roof of your mouth, that is separated from the rest of your head.
Yeah. Okay. Keep going.
Okay.
Lafort 3?
I double dog dare you to Google and search these. You know, okay. All right, Lafort 3 fracture. So, the part where we talked about the Lafort 2 going across the nose, it's
the
like that.
Nose, yeah.
But instead of going down like Lafort 2 does, it goes across. So, like, you have a break across your nose, and it's continuous with a break that goes...
to your, like, orbital?
Yep. And into your zygomatic bones, so, like, your cheekbones. And this is bilateral, so both sides. All the way across, one big fracture. And so, again, things are separated, but this is actually, like, a super serious issue, because now we have big airway problems.
Sure.
We can't keep it open. You need to insert, like, ET tubes so that you can keep a patent airway. There's the nasal lacrimal apparatus, so, like, the part that attaches your nose to your eyes, that's all busted up now. The part that attaches... there's CSF, like cerebral spinal fluid leakage.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah, like this is pretty serious, Lafort 3. Anyway, I dare you to Google image search Lafort 1, Lafort 2, and Lafort 3.
Not going to do it.
I actually thought Lafort 1 looked the worst because of, like, the floppy mouth part.
No, and I'm going to press stop now. There you have it. That was episode 12, which was adrenal glands, housing in St. Vincent, and Lafort fractures. Thank you very much. Hoping to see you next week for episode 13. Our theme music, Urbana Metronica Wuya Mix by Spinning Mercata, is copyright 2011, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. This show is not affiliated or endorsed in any way by St. James School of Medicine. Micah just goes there. The Art of Med School podcast is part of the Art of Med School Network. For more information, find us on the web at artofmedschool.com.